Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000. Hello and welcome once again. This is Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And welcome to the quest for 10,000, a podcast where we join Brian on his journey to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. Or as he turns 40, or maybe a little bit after he is 40, he will watch his 10,000th movie. But that's not important. It's really the process and not always the destination. We thank you so much for joining us for this time together, for downloading and sharing this with a friend. You can find us at 10kmovies.com or at 10kmovies on Twitter. So, Brian, we are now into 2016, the new year. And as many people, we are probably feeling a little nostalgic for times gone by, but eager about what is to come. So, for this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about the year that was and look forward to the year ahead and have a top five about movies that have to do with the future. Since 2016, well, according to Back to the Future Part 2, was the future. Yeah. And so we will continue to celebrate that. So, Brian, here's the first question as we come into a new calendar year. And that is, where are you in the quest? How many movies have you seen about now? Maybe approximate if you haven't counted exactly recently.
I am at 6250.
6250, yeah. Give or take.
Give or take,
yeah.
It's pretty accurate, but 6250.
6250. Now, of those 6250, how many would you say you have seen in the last year, in 2015?
Well, I have a website that's keeping track of it for me. I'm thinking I've probably seen 1600.
Now, before you were saying this year you'd really kicked it into overdrive.
I did.
What helped you be able to do that?
One thing, you know, over the summer of 2015, I made a concerted effort to go through the 19th century films with the Lumiere brothers, and then the first decade of the 20th century and knock out of them. I mean, partially it's to pad my numbers, but partially it's because so that I have an idea of what's going on in that era. I worked through every George Méliès film I could find. Well, some of them are lost, obviously, so I can't watch those. But and then this other guy, this Spanish guy that was pretty much a Méliès knockoff, so called Segundo Chamon, watched pretty much every one of his films I could.
And these films, these early films, they're about, what, 30 minutes in length
No.
Well, shorter than that?
Certainly at most. Many of them are a minute, especially the 19th century stuff. I mean, they didn't have enough time to really, you know, they couldn't, technology was not at a place where they could do more than that.
It was not like it is in the future.
The longest Méliès film is probably like 10, 15 minutes. That's the longest. Most of his films are like one or two reels, so they're going to be 5 minutes or so.
5 or 6 minutes.
Some of his are very funny. I mean, some of them are delightful, and I'm glad I've seen. At some point, I'll show it to you when we go off the air, but I'll tell everybody about it right now. There's a little film from 1907 called The Dancing Pig.
You should check this out on YouTube.
You should, because it is. Let me make sure I'm getting the name of it right, because it is very, very disturbing. I will just say that.
Definitely, I want to see this now.
It is one of the
surely.
Most, yeah,
I surely
it's just the
do.
Dancing pig. Yeah. It's this guy in a costume that looks like he belongs at Disney World, and at one point, it comes with a fully functioning tongue. Do you know? It is so off the rails crazy.
And when was this?
It was in 1907. Like, what the hell was wrong with people in 1907? Like, 108 years ago, humanity went off the rail because he just will not.
I'm watching it now.
Okay, let it load up.
It's a silent film.
Yeah,
it was a great deal.
Oh, but there were a lot of
tradition.
Yeah.
A short, unrelated stage acts.
Yeah.
Stage acts, that's a red flag. Not only nearly inexhaustible source early film content. But
I mean, you wouldn't find this
Dancing
film
Pig was a mind-boggling musical.
Oh yeah, it wasn't mind-boggling, but
mind-boggling. Oh my goodness!
No, you just wait. You just wait.
This
let's see.
What
the heck?
That is a very realistic.
What is going on with them?
Like, seriously, for 1907, that's a really realistic pig
part of the reason why it's blowing your mind. Like, what is going on with, how, what happened? Who was inspired 108 years ago to do this and film it for others to see?
I mean, I can't tell if that's its belly.
I know. That's also problematic for me, too.
That's another reason. Well, that's delightful. We'll watch more of that once this episode is done. But it begs another question, Brian. In the past year, what is, other than the Dancing Pig, what would you say is the most remarkable movie you've seen probably in 2015? That doesn't mean it came out in 2015. It just means in the last calendar year.
I can certainly look that up. So just to say what my highest rated films this year were. Hold on 1 second. I can do that. I can tell you some of them off the top of my head. I saw a movie that Liv Schreiber directed called Everything is Illuminated, which was just, I had not really heard of it. I guess it was just under the radar, not a film a lot of people were talking about. But I think the only reason I watched it was because it was in IMDb's top 1,000 movies. It's one of those right there. The only reason I said that was just phenomenal.
Yeah. What was it about?
Well, it's about this guy, what's his name? Elijah Wood. He is a Jew who is going back to Germany after one of his grandparents died, who was a Nazi Holocaust survivor. And he gets this guy to help him find where they were from. And then he finds out, and the guy he gets is like a terrible anti-Semitic. But he finds out when he gets this guy that this person was somehow involved in his grandmother's death. Like, he was a Jew, too.
Wow.
But what's so great is the first half of it is hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, it's really farcical. And then it just shifts into this really, like, poignant tale that just comes out of nowhere that I thought it handled it well, although I can understand why some people would think maybe that it didn't.
So what else do you have?
Okay, these are the five star movies that I have seen within this calendar year. Paddington, which we've talked about numerous times now. Sympathy, Lady Vengeance. I think it's Sympathy for Lady Vengeance. It's a Korean film directed by the guy that directed Old Boy, if you're familiar with Old Boy.
Right.
It's a trilogy of films he did, but this one was just fantastic. It's about a woman who she is somehow coerced into helping this guy who kidnaps children and kills them, and I think he takes her child and threatens her. She has to help. She goes to jail, and then when she gets out, she goes on a vengeance. She tracks him down, she contacts the families that also had been affected, who their children had been kidnapped and killed. They confront the guy and they murder him. And it is, and in so they do it as a pact. They're like, we don't want anybody to go to jail. We're all going to take a turn. Got this old lady who's hitting him with a hammer. It is really powerful stuff. It's really powerful.
Whoa, okay.
This other movie called Oslo, August 31st. It's about,
oh, I've seen that, I think, on Netflix.
It's about this guy who, it's like a some kind of European film, but he is just released from a rehab, and he's trying to like get his life back together. But it's just one of those films where it's just filled with this sense of existential angst. This guy, and he doesn't seem like he's a bad guy, but he just can't get his head around what he's supposed to. Really pretty film. MacArthur, a movie about General MacArthur, starring Gregory Peck as MacArthur. Fantastic movie. I don't know why nobody else
has seen that.
So.
Yeah, that's a classic.
I don't know. It's a wonderful film. He was. He is, for my mind, one of the most underrated people of the 20th century. I mean, he's the reason why Japan was able to recover at all. Interstellar.
Okay.
I love that movie.
We've talked about that before.
And Scenes from a Marriage, which is a Ingmar Bergman film, split into like four or five parts that just shows this couple, you know, they're married here, they're having a fight, they have a divorce, now they're married to other people, but they're having an affair together. And then it's just this way, it's just a really pretty film about how a relationship evolves and changes. Mm-hmm. And
really honestly, that's kind of our review section a little bit earlier than normal, but that's fine with 2015 movies. Before, though, we get to look at some of the 2016 movies both you and I are looking forward to, what are your New Year's resolutions as far as your movie quest goes? What are the type of movies, the list of movies that you're kind of thinking at this point you'd like to try to tackle?
Yeah. Well, one thing I'd like to do is I'd like to finish up a few things. There's the book, 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die. I don't know the exact type. I think that's it. As of this 2015, I don't know if the 2016 version has hit the shelves yet, but as of 2015, I have like 148 to go to have watched all of them. It's a reasonable expectation, although maybe a little ambitious, that I could finish it sometime in the calendar year 2016. So that'd be a nice thing to do. I'm slowly working on like every film that was nominated for an acting Oscar, period.
So supporting any of the roles.
Roughly since the first Academy Awards in 1928, I have roughly. I'm not talking foreign films. I'm just acting or Best Picture or Best Director. One of those, the Big Six. Anything nominated for the Big Six Awards. I roughly have about 250 total that I haven't seen. I've seen everything since like 85 forward. So I know I'll get the 80s done. I only have 8 left in that. It's reasonable to think I could be close to, if not done, with the 70s forward in that.
Okay.
That's kind of a goal I have.
Is there any new kind of genre of film that you maybe want to try to tackle that you haven't seen much of yet or you haven't really gotten into? You mentioned the short films, and the origin of filmmaking. Is there something like a horror genre or
Towards the end of this year, I guess I started maybe in September, October, there's a list, and I don't know where they're getting their list from, but there's top 500 horror movies of all time. And to be honest, I'd only seen like 150, 160 of those. And so it is an area that I'm sort of lacking in because I just don't necessarily care for it. But I think some of that is a misconception on my part because of the time I grew up, when I think horror, I immediately think of Jason Voorhees or Freddy Krueger, and that's kind of shortchanging the genre. It can be a lot of other things in addition to slasher films. That's certainly a part of it, but it's not the entirety of the genre. So I have been kind of focusing on trying to work through some of those, and some of them I've liked, some of them I haven't. But I'm just trying to
work through that. Expand your horizons. As the case may be. So that's resolutions for 2016. And now what is kind of on your short list? Sorry, I pulled my phone back up and it's just an image of the dancing pig.
That's one of the things
I'm anticipating the most after this podcast is to watch the rest of that film. But what are some films that are coming out this year that you are eager for? And I'll chip in with my kind of thoughts too.
Thing, with the caveat that, in January, by May, my expectations, I'll change. Because you start to get a feel for, the films that aren't even on anybody's radar yet because they haven't hit the festival circuit. So they get picked up. Now there's a buzz about them. So inevitably, by May or June, I have these, ideal films I want to see that I don't even know they exist right now. But going into 2016, I'd say Batman vs. Superman is high on my list. The female Ghostbusters, I'm insanely curious about, just because I want to know if it's gonna be able to overcome the somewhat misogynist sort of anger that seems to be directed at it, or if that's gonna be enough to just topple it all together. And some of that I don't think is necessarily, some of it is misogynist, but some of it is just an active nostalgic protective instinct you have about something from your childhood that you don't want to see ripped away from you. So, but it's those two contributing factors are a lot for a movie to overcome. The Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. How is that gonna, how is the Harry Potter world gonna expand? Is it gonna work? I know, there's of course the Marvel films that are coming out. I don't know if any non-event movies that it's hard to get excited about this early. But
yeah, just looking, I gotta be honest. Maybe it's because I haven't done this before and wouldn't be doing it if we hadn't started this podcast. But you know, just doing a quick Google search, and I'm surprised at all the like big kind of movies that do kind of interest me. I mean, Batman versus Superman. You're a little more excited for that than I am.
I am, because I love Superman.
I loved X-Men Days of Future Past.
Oh my gosh.
And now the Image of Apocalypse notwithstanding, I'm excited for that one. I loved Captain America Winter Soldier, one of the best Marvel films to date. So Civil War, I'm really excited about. Suicide Squad,
You might not be excited about it.
I'm lukewarm.
You got to admit, you're curious to see how Jared Leto's Joker plays.
I'm intrigued. Deadpool looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Be hysterical fun.
Ryan Reynolds looks like this is going to be great. One thing that I noticed on this list, lots of sequels, and your mileage may vary on that, but also lots of neat little animated movies. I've only seen the trailers for Zootopia so far, but that looks kind of cool.
You mentioned Sausage Party, which I think does sound incredibly
party.
Fun. Could be incredibly fun.
And then, of course, I think probably the one I'm looking most forward to, just because I know the first movie has such great meaning for me. Saw it right before I got married, and my wife and I will be taking our son to see Finding Dory. Just really, really excited for that one. I know you said you were a little bit nervous about that movie.
I am a little bit nervous. My fear is that Pixar has gotten to the point where they have such a varied and wonderful catalog that they're just cashing in on that nostalgia and that catalog with Toy Story 4, which seems totally unnecessary to me. Finding Dory. Finally, The Incredibles 2. But it just seems like it's just an attempt to... Anytime you get to that point, you run the risk of moving away from what it is that made your film special to begin with. So I'm leery, although I'll admit I'm very insanely curious and very excited. I love Albert Brooks. Any chance to have his name out there and doing something that big is great for me. I think Ellen DeGeneres is the best thing she's done as far as any kind of film work goes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and Finding Nemo, I frequently find that people in it, it's almost always in my top five films that they were a part of.
Now, the other part of those are movies we're eager to see. Now movies that not only are we not necessarily eager to see them, but honestly, we think they're going to bomb.
Okay.
I see a number
that I could say
here's are going to be kind of just really bad.
I'm not sure if this movie will bomb because I think it has a built-in audience and its budget's probably not that big. But a little movie called God's Not Dead 2. I suffered through God's Not Dead, and I won't say I wished he was, but I wish the
podcast.
People that made it were.
Yes.
How could you say something about such a great message movie? Well, because the message stunk, and I just did not like. Cannot see why it merits a sequel, and the sequel, my guess, will be the exact same movie, which is somebody that is anti-Christian, probably pro-evolution, atheist, who gets converted at a deathbed experience. I've wrote the movie.
There you go. Well, here's some others that I see that I think could just really bomb. Here's what I think the candidates are. Suicide Squad could actually bomb.
No,
I could see that possibly bombing.
It will make its money back. It may be very poorly received. Bomb in the sense of critically, like people hate it or nobody goes to see it. People go to see it. So it's going to make its money.
One or the other or both. Warcraft?
Big massive money
could though be a flop.
No.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2,
big bomb.
Zoolander 2
will be hugely successful.
I think is gonna
hugely successful.
Be interesting. See,
the people that love Zoolander love Zoolander.
Dirty Grandpa
will be moderately successful.
Assassin's Creed,
huge hit, bigger hit than Steve Jobs from Michael Fassbender.
The remake of Ben-Hur.
Nobody will see it.
All right. These are the ones that I see just right now
as
being candidates. Things that will be hyped a lot.
This is kind of fun to predict
the
box office.
And may not do all that well. So the
Angry
Birds
the
movie.
I think it'll be moderately successful. The commercial for it looked pretty good.
So those are ones we think may not do as well. Maybe they'll be a commercial success, but critically, I don't anticipate them being that well received, but, and financially, they may not do that well.
Before
either.
We move on,
I think
to
my
our...
biggest the two ones that if I could really peg as being ones that will not be as successful as they're going to be marketed as Zoolander 2 and Warcraft.
Zoolander 2 will be a huge hit. Warcraft has a built-in audience of millions of people that play its game. They are going to go see this movie.
And who will get kind of pissed if it's not that great.
But Warcraft has the same sort of marketing tool behind it that the Lord of the Rings movies had.
And most people agreed that at least the Hobbit movies weren't good.
But the Lord of the Rings movies were fantastic.
Lord of the Rings movies were fantastic.
Well, did you see, speaking of which, I want two things. One, Peter Jackson gave as close to an apology as you're going to get from a director of a movie like that, where he sort of said, I didn't have a lot of time.
Yeah, I saw that late. That was late last year. Yeah.
He said, I didn't have a lot of time, and I took over from Guillermo del Toro, and I didn't really do the pre-production I wanted, so it felt a little rushed. It's like, then why did you do it in three movies? I mean,
there you go. Well, and I feel like, again, I feel like
that,
a lot of these...
That's very, very... I mean, that tells me a lot about if he's willing to say something like that about his own movies. That's very... You know, you didn't hear the guy from that took over Ant-Man late in the game by saying that. So it's come sort of. The other thing I want to do before we move on to another segment, just to give a little shout out to a movie that a friend of mine recommended I watch, and it was one of the most horrendous and disturbing experiences I've ever seen. Late last year, my longtime listener, as if there's such a thing, my friend Jamie Porter suggested that I watch this movie. It's called Flowers in the Attic. Came out in 1987, and it was as disturbing as Dancing Pig, only flash forward. I guess once every 80 years, we get a movie. It's like Halley's Comet. So it came back, and it was just unbelievably disturbing. This mother, her husband dies, so she takes her kids to see her estranged parents. Well, when she goes in, she says, well, the reason why we're estranged is because your dad was my uncle, and my parents would not let us see each other. Well, they cut us off from the family once I married my uncle and had you four children. So now we're going to go live with them. And they don't like me. So then when they go, they lock the four children in a room in the attic while the mom goes. And at first, she takes her punishment by being beaten senseless. But then the mom abandons her children in the attic and then attempts to poison her children. And one of them does die. And then she's going to get remarried and pretend she never had children because now she's... It is just the most... Words cannot describe how horrible this movie is. It's just horrible on every level. But Louise Fletcher, who won an Oscar for One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest, is the grandmother in this movie, which, again, goes to prove that an Oscar does not guarantee you to have a successful career.
Did you realize there was a 2014?
Oh, there's a remake of this movie. I am aware of it, and trust me, I'm insanely curious. It's just
Heather Graham and Ellen Burstyn.
Yeah. I mean, I will watch it because I'm insanely curious. But
well, maybe 2016 will lead to a better... impression of that movie. But now we do move on to our final segment. We move on to Brian's top five list. Okay. Now, a previous top five list, we talked about movies that had time travel as a major plot element. Mm-hmm. This top five is maybe similar, but different. This top five is top five movies since 2016 is the future. These are top five movies that are set in the future,
mm-hmm.
whatever future that may be. And as long, to me, it's fair game as long as when the movie came out. See, if it was a 1975
movie. Well, like 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Right.
It's still a future movie.
Right.
Or Back to the Future Part 2, still in the future.
Even
though it's a year ago.
The future. Right. Exactly. Okay. So, what are your top five movies that have the future?
Before we get to top five, I'm going to not even discuss them. I'm just going to read off the movies that Honorable mentioned as I was trying to come up with this list. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, Star Trek, the 2009 remake, it's up there for me, Time Bandits, Metropolis, a movie that came out in 1927, which I still think is pretty powerful, Her, movie recently with Joaquin Phoenix, Alien, Artificial Intelligence, AI, and Minority Report. Now, those are movies that did not make my top five, but they're all worthy movies, and the distinction is very limited in between those three. Coming in at number five, a movie from the 1970s, Sleeper, starring Woody Allen. If you watch the movie, the plot is sort of like Futurama.
Okay.
It is more or less Futurama. He falls into a cryogenic chamber, wakes up, it's been 100, 200 years, whatever. That's a very funny movie.
Okay.
Number four, District 9.
Which is also, this is a second appearance on the top five list. This was in your top five movies with that had a number in it. Yeah.
I like that movie a lot. It's a, kind of like a, it's a response to apartheid in some way, because it's by a South African filmmaker. But it's just, I think it's great. Number three, Mr. Nobody. It's got Jared Leto. It's got Sarah Pauly. It's set, I don't know what year it's set in, but set in the future where humanity has more or less ended. Humanity has has been able to stop the dying process. Nobody dies anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They've been able to cure dying or whatever. So it's this interview with the world's oldest man. The you know, because all these other people, they just stopped dying. So now he's like the oldest, and now he's like 800 years old or something, insane number of years old. And it's this guy sneaking in to interview him, and he flashes back on his life, but then he also thinks back to the choices he's made, and he sort of imagines, not really sure if it's imagining or if he's really kind of like time-shifting, like in Slaughterhouse-Five or something, but if I'd gone this way, would my life been different if I'd gone this way? And he has three different kind of like love affairs that he could have chosen or whatever. It's a really good movie.
Okay.
We're at number two now.
Two.
Interstellar.
Yes.
I love that movie.
That was your number time. That was your time travel movie. It was your number one time travel movie, I think.
It may have been.
And now you're number
I love
two
that movie. Love that movie. I mean, it's part of the reconnaissance.
All right.
Yeah, I didn't coin that term, but I've heard reconnaissance.
Okay.
I really like the movie. Christopher Nolan, I think his best work, most mature work. It's got so much going on for it. And Michael Caine, who I love too.
As in every Christopher Nolan movie.
And he should be. And number one is going to be the one, and we said we would talk about this, and it's going to drive people batty. And not all of it's set in the future, some of it's set in the past. But Cloud Atlas.
It's very high on your list.
It's very high. I mean, I know.
What do you think are the more successful parts of the movie? The parts set in the future or the parts set in the past?
Probably the parts set in the past, to be honest with you. The parts set in the future, one of them is a little almost anime-inspired in a way. It feels like several animes I've seen. It has that kind of look to it, that real sleek, future look, maybe Fifth Element-esque kind of
thing. So tell me one thing. Why is it that you love Cloud Atlas
and no one else
and
does?
No one else seems
to? Well, I think there are other people that do. It's just it's a minority. I just think it speaks to me because basically the movie just said that love is the most important thing there can be. And love transcends and love continues to reverberate. And, you know, love is the pathway by which we can live well after we die. We can have an impact on future generations.
But I like that message too. And so I think what we'll sign off with this time is to say that we hope that for you this new year is filled with love, life, and laughter in many ways as you watch as many movies as possible as you continue on this quest for the 10,000. Friends, may your 2016 be a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline 11. See you later.